A lot less hiring than expected. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. That's in the report out this morning.
Just 22,000 new jobs were created in August. The unemployment rate rose to 4.3%, the highest rate since October of 2021. June and July's job creation together have been revised lower by 21,000.
That's Fox's Jenny Casola. Now, the White House Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett predicts the August hiring will be revised higher later. And he says there's a silver lining in the report.
Wage numbers are fantastic. The wage growth is almost at 4%, which means that the typical wage earner in America right now has gotten a $500 raise already because of Donald Trump.
On Wall Street, stocks started the day rising. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ hit all-time highs. That has changed. The NASDAQ is now down 140 points. The Dow is dropping 370. Later today, President Trump plans an executive order to rebrand the Department of Defense. Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen just told Fox,
I love the idea of getting back to the Department of War. We are in a very volatile time. I'd say it's one of the most volatile times we've had since prior to World War II.
And speaking of that, days after a U.S. military strike hit a boat, killing 11 suspected gang members smuggling illegal drugs near the coast of Venezuela.
The Department of Defense says a Venezuelan aircraft flew near a U.S. Navy ship in international waters in a move it calls highly provocative. GOP House Armed Services Committee member Carlos Jimenez says the move, quote, amounts to an obscene escalation that will not be taken lightly.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz. Israel has hit a high-rise building in Gaza City, said to be used for Hamas surveillance, continuing a deadly escalation of the war. The same day, Hamas released a new video showing two hostages who are among the 20 believed to still be alive. One of them, likely speaking under duress, pleaded for Israel to end the war so they could return to their families. America's listening to Fox News.
Millions are choosing NordVPN to stay safer online. Get NordVPN today with 77% off and up to 3 months extra. NordVPN will encrypt your online traffic and help you avoid phishing, scams, and malware. Get the special NordVPN deal today at NordVPN.com. This offer includes a 77% discount on a 2-year plan and up to 3 extra months. Savings and additional terms apply and can be found on NordVPN.com. The offer is valid until October 15th.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
News 11's information desk, I'm Julina Aguilera. A human man who robbed a grocery store with a knife was sentenced in court. 36-year-old Jerry Miranda was sentenced to 7 years behind bars after taking a plea deal for armed robbery. Police say he robbed the Del Sol Market on 4th Avenue back in March. He was captured a block away with a knife and stolen items. He will get credit for time served. Plus, the Yuma City Council honored a retiring chief with the Yuma Fire Department. Chief Dusty Fields is retiring from YFD after 31 years of service. Wednesday night, he was presented with a retirement gift and honored at the Yuma City Council meeting. While he has worked for the department for decades, he says he's been part of it his whole life. Today was Chief Fields' last official day with the department. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Sunny, hot, and humid for the weekend. We'll hit 96 today, 80 tonight, 98 tomorrow, 80 tomorrow night, 103 on Sunday, 80 on Sunday night.
Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis, senior wealth advisor. Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, George Davis Sr. Good morning, George.
Morning, Tom. Happy Friday out there.
Yeah, I hope everybody's recovering from the big storm and the wetness, and I know there's some flooding going on. I saw pictures on Facebook of houses having water pushed into their doorway and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that
some of those washes were flowing pretty well.
Yeah,
I didn't see those. I haven't seen the Weather Service give out those. You know how they give the warnings on TV and your phone? They were beeping all during that, even before too.
So. Yeah. Well, the desert desperately needed more water, so that's a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, these trees out there look pretty bad for being desert trees.
But this water really messes up the agriculture. I mean, they try to monitor in their water, and I don't know what they – sometimes this gets it started too fast for them.
Yeah, and I think it floods the fields and messes up the dirt. And
yeah, they struggle with this unannounced water.
Yeah.
Especially with this type of downpour. They like a slow drizzle. But there's not really any winter crops yet or anything. It really gets bad when there's lettuce.
I think that coming up, though. I mean, they're breaking ground. So
It's
a problem for somebody, believe me.
When do they plant the lettuce and stuff, Tom? Is that soon?
Yeah, right now. Yeah, I think right now.
Oh,
I'm the first part of it.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not a lettuce guy. But so anyways, the big number came out this morning on jobs. You hear that, George?
I did not hear that.
So they were supposed to come out with like 73,000 of new jobs for August, and then they came out with about 22,000.
Wow.
So it was under. The market responded positive because they think that's going to be a reason to force the Fed to lower rates. And then it was positive for a little bit, and then now it's red now, so a little change of heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did kind of roll
but,
over.
But, you know, that's just the first number for August. As you know, they change that numbers about three times the next 60 days.
Yeah.
But that's a big difference between 73,000 new jobs compared to 23,000.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty low, too, even the consensus of the 73. I remember it was 100 plus.
75 is what they kind of like to see.
For healthy.
Yeah, and anything above that's a good number. So.
Have you ever seen a negative?
Yeah.
Like a negative number for the jobs report? Like
I think during COVID and all that, things got bad.
Interesting.
But, yeah, it just means that, if you
less more, hires than
more people are let go
than
hired, it'd be a negative number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was during COVID, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, and probably a recession. Like, I don't know what happened in 08, the financial and the real estate market.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure people got, jobs got tight. So I don't know. I mean, So anyways, one of the things that I want to talk about today is Trump came up with these accounts for newborns. And if you're born January 1st of 25, you qualify. And that basically they can set up an account and the federal government would put in $1,000 at birth or give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And that money can be invested into an ETF or a mutual fund. And then on top of that, family can put in up to $5,000 a year into these accounts. So it's after-tax money, not pre-tax money. There's no deduction. But and it grows like an IRA account, basically. It's kind of like a hybrid IRA account, which means there's no taxes or capital gains on it when it grows.
Mm-hmm.
And then at age and you can't touch it before the age of 18.
Yeah, you can't.
So that's a hard,
basically frozen. Yeah, you can't take it out.
Yeah, can't touch. Mm-hmm. So at age 18, if you pulled it out, it'd be treated as an IRA account, which means there's a 10% penalty because it's premature contribution and it's taxable,
mm-hmm.
which is really a tough way to get the money. But what they want you to do is either convert it to an IRA or Roth IRA and have it give you a jump start on your retirement.
Yeah. So when you're 18 and the contribution, there's three types of contribution, Tom. The first one you talked about was the federal one. That's a one-time $1,000.
Correct.
So that's not every year, where the private one can be every year up to $5,000. So you could, have different parents put away $1,000 each and have $5,000 a year, and you can do that annually. But the one time the government gives you $1,000, like you said.
Yeah. And they also have the other person that can contribute is an employer.
Yeah, an
and
employer
they
can
do $2,500 over then you're done. So it's not $2,500 annual, it's just a
that
lifetime.
That was a one time, too, the $2,500.
Well, I think it's a lifetime,
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I don't like about it is a couple things is – you think they would have let you move that to a 529 plan, which would be a college plan, because ultimately when you get out of school, high school, I mean, you got to make a decision, go into the workforce or go to some kind of tech school, go to college. So it would have been nice to use it for schooling, which it doesn't allow. Now, you can take it out and take the 10% penalty and take the tax on it, but that's usually still about 20%, 25%, depending on assuming the kid's on a high tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if someone's making, say a teenager's working, they can continue to fund a Roth IRA, so that's $7,000 based on their age, or an IRA, that's $7,000 a year. But they could also max $5,000 in this program, so you can do both.
Yeah, you can do both. And you talked about that one from the employer, which is nice, and that's limited to $2,500, but that's a lifetime limit. That's once, like you said. But in this article, they were saying it's not an annual limit, but a lot of people think Congress intended it to be. So I think when they put this Trump, what do they call this, the Trump...
Big Beautiful Bill?
Yeah, well, they call these Trump accounts. And, you know, Trump likes to put a stamp on stuff. So I think when they put this out, there's some tweaking that needs to be done. But that's interesting that you would say that about a 529. So I'm sure, because you can't, they don't even have these things open yet. You can't open them and have the government put their money in yet. So I think they'll do some things like change the annual limit and maybe make it to the 529.
Yeah, there's some gray areas that I think aren't concrete yet. So as this information comes out, it could probably change, but you're right. There's still some unknown.
Mm-hmm. But you can make a Roth you can do it to a Roth conversion after 18.
Yeah.
So you can take that because it acts like an IRA up until then, even after. But if you convert it to a Roth when you're 18, now you have a Roth.
Taxable, 100% taxable.
Yeah.
Conversion. Yeah.
Well, from 18 on, though, it grows tax-free. We're talking about a Roth in here. You already have a head start. Talk about starting at age zero.
Yeah. So let's just say the S&P on average does, I'm going to say 9%. I think it's 9.5 or something. So that means you should double your money every 8 years. So if you put 1,000 in at birth, and then it's going to double at 8, that'd be $2,000, then double again at 16. So that'd be $4,000, and then maybe another 2 years. So maybe probably close to $5,000 if the market does what
if it's only $1,000 from the government, yeah.
Yeah, what it historically does.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you put that $5,000, and I wish I would have done the math, I didn't. But then you put that $5,000 in, and it goes, you know, for another, say, age 20 to 60, so 40 years. I mean, I'm going to figure this out on break because my brain's not – plug in now, but it's probably a substantial amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if it doubles every 8 years.
Yeah. Rule 72.
Well, let's see, 40 years. That's 5 years of doubling. So we can do it right now. So it'd be 5,000 by the time they're about 18. So then it'd be 5,000, it'd be 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, 80,000, 160, about 160,000.
Wow.
Give or take.
Just with starting with $1,000 from the government?
Starting with $1,000.
Yeah.
Now, if parents had the extra means to even fund, you know, $500, $200 a year as they were growing up, that would really jumpstart their retirement.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and I see this at our work, is a lot of people don't plan 100% for college. And some of them plan, they don't put any money away for college. So... you know, that's the hurdle if someone's going to go to a tech school or college. I mean, that's really the big thing that parents are trying to overcome is how do we get our kid in school without causing financial disaster for ourselves or pulling out too much money in certain areas that might affect their retirement. So that's why I wish I had some kind of component for college.
I could see him changing that, but that's a good point because what we're running into is a real life example is Matt's going to, he's a senior year, you know, this is at U of A, and he's going to graduate in physiology. He wants to be a physical therapist.
So Matt's your son, right?
Yeah, Matt's my son. So he's going to graduate, you know, physiology, wants to be a physical therapist. But if you want to be a physical therapist, you got to go 3 years post-grad.
Yeah.
After school, you get to get your doctorate.
Yeah.
And we didn't really plan for that like we should have maybe thinking because when you're in your first 4 years, you get a good, you know, you can get scholarships, you can get grants, you can get quite a few things. And he got some good scholarships because he did well in high school.
Yeah.
But now post-grad, you don't get those things.
Yeah.
So it pretty much falls on you to either get a loan or pay it yourself or rely on the parents much more. And kids in this day and age wanting to get ahead and having, you know, more than 4 years of college, I would think would be more common than not.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you read, and sometimes that grad school probably has to be put on the child.
Yeah.
I mean, just because, like you say, you run out of money. So what are you going to do, mortgage your house, go dig up some gold in the desert? I mean, you don't have much of a choice. You got to get loans, right?
Yeah, you do.
So, but that's the choice of, you know, I mean, it's great that he goes on to grad school in that, but, you know, there's always a decision to make.
It's expensive, man. I mean,
like 70, 80 grand a year, right?
Yeah. Or something? Yeah, there's only so many. There's U of A and NAU that does.
Arizona.
You know, physical therapist gives you that doctorate degree. So he put into Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, Idaho.
No.
But you go out of state and adds up.
Well, my niece is in the same program, and she could have went to NAU. She got accepted.
Oh.
And it was like half the price, but she wanted to go to San Diego, Southern California, just for lifestyle.
Mm.
So I think she's coming out with student loans of like 250 grand or something.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
But the only thing is she's out now, but if she works at a school like a, and there's some schools around California that are considered those schools, if she works, I believe 10 years, it goes away or something.
Oh, they still have those.
Well, you have to be in a certain school district.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure which one she's in, but she qualified. Mm-hmm. So now it's 10 more years that they would forgive that loan.
Oh, wow.
Or the school
That's
does
big
or somebody.
That
yeah.
much.
So
they do that a lot with the teachers here locally. You know, if you're
I
in
think
a rural
every,
area.
Every school qualifies in Yuma, for a rural area,
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah, so.
You know, have a. If you have so much in. Student loans that can be forgiven, especially
now
how much
in
science.
So how much money does that type of career make? Have you Googled it?
I think about 95.
Like starting out?
Well, no, probably not starting out. Maybe 80.
Yeah, 75.
Yeah, 75, 80.
Yeah, so that's probably at least
30 to 40%
more.
Your own, you know, boss, you have to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, we'll take our first break here. This is Money Talk, 5, 6 a.m. Be right back.
Everyone's trying to get it right. Get it right.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we believe we manage money for our clients differently from many other advisors. Our way works in close alignment with our clients' goals. Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor when it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement. We're clearly different. Visit YIVWM.com. Find out why investors switch to us. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and an SEC registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, George Davis with Yuma Investment and Imperial Valley Wealth Management. Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management.
Yeah.
So we are here just talking about what's going on. What do you have to talk about? Anything good?
Well, we got a big conference coming up on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the Carson Excel Conference.
Yep, we're lucky to have it in Scottsdale, so we're taking more of our staff than we usually take. I think there's 11 of us going.
Yeah.
So be interesting to see what's out there. Usually there's new information or, you know, you see they have a bunch of booths there. So you get to go walk around and listen to what they say, tell you at the booth as far as different investment products or that.
Yeah. It's all geared to also improve the client experience, Tom. You know, Carson is our registered investment advisory firm based out of Omaha. They do a great job and they have these conferences once a year. It's the Elite Advisor Conference. And, you know, there's great, you know, they talk about the economy and different strategies and different investments, but they also have, you know, financial planning and different strategies that they find to help our clients when it comes to the financial planning and
they have a
things like the Flourish, you know, where you can get, you know, a good money on your money market. And so that's what I really like about them. They're always looking, striving to help their advisors.
Yeah, and they usually have a big speaker come in.
Yeah,
is it Olympics? Someone from the Olympics or something?
I didn't even know.
It's some kind of athlete. I forgot.
Oh, is it?
I think it's from the Olympics. But.
Okay.
So we're through the August, which means we're 3/4 of the way through the year, right?
Yeah.
So these are the
September is historically kind of a bad month, they say. You know, if you look at history in the market.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was that easy to know what month to get in and get out. Because, you know, they say sell away and go away in May.
Sell in May and go
so
away.
So June, July, August, I mean, that's markets at all time high. Mm-hmm. But here's the asset classes year to date, what's up? So the number one leading is gold. Guess how much that's up, George? Put you on the spot.
I think I heard it was $3,500 an ounce.
It's 31% is up for the year, gold. And then foreign stock is second, up 24%. And the foreign market's been way undervalued the last 10 years, and there's a lot of talk about it, you know, going to eventually come back, and it looks like it's happening. But
yeah, 24% year to date, that's good. Yeah.
And that theme probably will be around for a couple of years because, like I said, it's the U.S. stock market, you know, last 10 years looks great, and the foreign markets has not performed as well, but they'll probably catch up. U.S. stocks are up 10.8%. So,
like,
you know,
S&P
if it
500?
Ends, just as U.S. stocks, I don't know what index I'm pulling from, but if it ends right now, that's a double-digit year, so that, you know, that's not terrible. We'll see how the year shakes out. Foreign bonds are up 8.7%. Treasury tips are up 6.4%. U.S. bonds are up 6%. Real estate is up 5.7%. And then commodities are up 4.6, but there's no negatives.
Yeah, really.
So that's, you know, use that as a negative somewhere in there, whether it's commodities or bonds or
the
that.
The bonds surprised me a little bit with how the yields have not gone down like people had hoped.
Yeah,
you know,
but
the interest rates are still high.
Yeah, but you know, 22 bonds took the worst bond hit in the history of bonds. It was the worst bond market since the Civil War.
Yeah.
So that probably just rebounding back some, because 6% on a U.S. bonds is
that's good,
not bad. So,
and then the foreign international bonds too.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, I hope things hold up so far. But you know, for three quarters of the year, numbers are looking pretty good.
Yeah, that is good. So the market's kind of pulled back a little bit here, Tom, last couple of weeks. But you know, you hear a lot about the market being overvalued, hitting new highs. What is it you're recommending now as far as telling clients when you meet with the reviews, take a little profit yet or kind of stay in the course or just reallocation into some internationals? And
so I give the analogy of like driving a car, and this is probably the toughest thing we have to do as far as within our profession, is a lot of people want to go 0 miles an hour or go 100 miles an hour. And, you know, zero meaning, you know, things are looking bad. Someone got in the office. Everything's going to go down the tube. Let's get out. 100 miles an hour. And they usually want to go faster when the market does well.
Mm-hmm.
So historically, the market's at a high point still, very high, almost all-time high. So that's when people want to start going 100 miles an hour. But that's really not the time to go 100 miles an hour. But a lot of people like to chase numbers. So when things get ugly and things get beat up, and the market drops 20%, 30%, 40%, that's when people want to start slowing down. And really, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So to answer your question is, no one knows what's going to happen next week, next month. But as markets continue to go up, and this is really important when you're like 3 to 5 years out from retirement and when you're retired. Because when you're retired, you can't go back and make more money or leave your money there for a while because you're living on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or when 3 to 5 years before you retire, you don't want to be all in the stock market and the market goes down 30%. And then you just realize you lost a lot of money before you retire. And that happened in 08, 09, which I lived it. And a lot of people really had to extend their retirement for like another 2 or 3 years.
Work longer.
Yeah. So anyways, the answer to your question is, I don't know, but I do know as profits go up, it's not a bad idea to take some of that off the table, the profit, reallocate it to a safer position.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking cash or money market, but some kind of safer position, 80% bonds, 20% equity, or 60% bonds, 40% equity. And then if the market keeps going up in 26, take that off the table. The gain goes up in 27, take that off the table.
Mm.
You won't kick yourself because you're going to be principal is going to be making money in 25, 26, 27. But whenever the market does some kind of pullback, and it does, and it will, you have, I call it bullets in the gun, so you can start going faster.
Mm.
And the bottom line is you want to go faster when things are cheaper, buy low, sell high. And in order to do that, you have to have funds available. You know, we recommend for retired people, or even if you're going to retire in a year or two, to have about 5 years of what your income needs are relatively safe. And I say relatively safe, Say when you retire, you need $25,000 a year off your retirement account to make ends meet. And the only way you'd really know that is by going through the numbers. We call it doing a financial plan. But you want to keep 5 years of income pretty safe, so that's $125,000. Mm-hmm. And then anything below that, you can take on a little bit more risk because you got more time. So to answer your question, harvest out gains as the market does well, and then rebalance when the market does poorly.
Yeah.
Sounds easy, but you'd be amazed at the implementation of it. Or we see people, when you do the strategy, you're taking gains off the table, you got some money built up where you can buy back and when it drops, and when the market does drop, you know, a lot of people get cold feet and they're like, well, it's going to get worse. And if you don't put the money back in the market, you know, it can go back up and then you completely defeated your strategy. So mm-hmm. a lot of this is being non-emotional with the money and just sticking to a plan and making sure there's enough income available for retirees and not taking too much risk when you're going to retire because, you know, in 2008, the market went down 51%. So if you're all in a stock fund and you had to say you had $1 million.
Or even a moderate fund.
But your $1 million is now $600,000. Mm-hmm. Not the best way to retire. So a lot of people were forced to continue on to work. You don't want to be one of those people.
Mm-hmm. I like the bucket approach you talk about, Tom. It's one of the things we learned about when we were at a Carson conference. But if you think of bucket one is what you're talking about, that 5 years worth of income, that's your more conservative bucket. So if you needed $125,000 in that bucket, then you can kind of keep filling it because as the market, you know, keeps hitting new highs and stocks do better, bucket two and bucket three, which are a little bit more aggressive, are going to get filled more than the bucket one, which is your income bucket. So when you're talking about moving gains and moving money from bucket three, which is doing well, into bucket one, it kind of makes sense. I'm going to keep filling that bucket, and as that one gets depleted, I'll be taking those gains. And the fear of missing out is a true thing. You said, you know, people, it's easier said than done. But people are like, oh, man, the market's doing great. My neighbor's
kicking butt. Let's
buy
more. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And if we take those risk questionnaires right now, people tend to score higher. You know, how do you feel about the market? Positive. And then their risk score, you know, from 1 to 100 ends up being a 70. Are they really a 70? Or is it just kind of what's going on in the market right now? So, you know, we got to really explain those. I tell them, look, if you're a 70 right now, this is what could happen, and it will happen. You know, and tell them how much it could be down.
So we have a program called Nitrogen, which does like a risk test, and it tells you like a 6 month period what could be the worst kind of pullback.
Mm-hmm.
Shows you what the pullback would have been in the 2008 crisis, and also it goes from 2007 to 2009. So you can give real numbers to people and say, okay, if your account dropped 200,000. What would you do?
And instead of being up.
And they got to give you a truthful answer because a lot of times they're like, oh, we just sit tight. But if that really happened, they'd be on the phone saying, you know, I lost too much money. Let's get out. So it's really about having a very transparent conversation and you know, making sure people are speaking their emotions and their heart while things are up. Because, you know, if you're going to rebalance or take a less risk, you want to do it on a high note, not on a low note.
Right.
And two times or more times than not, a lot of clients do it on a low note because that's when they realize there are 700,000 now, you know, 550, and then they get cold feet.
Yeah.
So, I would say 25% of our this profession is really just kind of being an emotional shrink, helping people figure out, you know, what the game plan is and sticking to it.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I would say with these different buckets, your money could be going at different speeds. So you could have one car going at 20 miles an hour, which isn't a lot of risk. One going at another bucket of money going at 40 miles an hour, another bucket at 60 miles an hour, and then the last bucket maybe 100 miles an hour. And then you can play those buckets against each other, meaning if the 100 miles an hour, which is all would be all stock, goes up 20%, you can take some out off and move it back to the other buckets up top. Or if the market drops 25%, you can move money back from the slower buckets back to the to the bigger bucket. So, but the bottom line is what you don't want to do, and I've seen this happen many times, is you want to get all the way in or all the way out. Because if you get out of the market, it's very painful to get back in. And you know, 50% of the time or more, you get in at a higher rate. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a guessing game. So
well, you got to guess right twice.
My feeling is it's kind of like when you're driving a car, if you're kind of hesitant, shift down the gears a little bit, but don't stop the car. And then if you think things might get better, you can shift up the gears and go faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what we help people do.
Yeah.
So, and I think it has a big impact because if you do this thing right, this strategy will help you to basically buy low, sell high, take profits when they're high, and, mm-hmm. and you know, so it works. You just got to have the discipline.
Yeah, you're disciplined and you're more consistent in your returns. And, you know, they show that when they look back and the history of trying to get in and out. If you know, people that try to get in and out and they guess right, guess wrong, if they guess right, they have about a 3-4% difference in your return year over year if you look back.
Yeah, a lot of times people don't beat the S&P 500, which is a big thing of, you know, everyone says, well, just put in the S&P 500, it beats, you know, most of everything. And that's true, it does. But the reason why it does is because people shoot themselves in the foot and try to get in and out and try to time stuff, mm-hmm. and their numbers are less. So, but if you did a strategy that would, you know, buy low, sell high, and then take profits off the table, you know, over time that should beat the S&P 500. So, yeah. And we'll take another break here. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we've been proudly serving the community since 2001. Your financial future deserves the personalized care and expertise that only a local trusted advisor can provide. From retirement planning to wealth management, we're here to help you reach your goals with confidence. Investment advisor services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Welcome back, Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU, George Davis Sr.
Imperial
Valley Wealth Management, a senior advisor there. And I got Tom Resch here with me and Russ. Russ, I like your hat, Washington Commanders.
Thank you, man.
Are they going to change the name back?
I don't know.
So it's an ongoing joke because your name isn't senior, but you're the oldest one in the office. So,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have the most gray hair until you started dying it, George.
Is that how you do that?
Now it's jet black. Yeah, hey.
I need to do that.
No, it's weird. It's like if I put just regular gel, it's not colored gel. I mean, it looks this way. Instead of being more, you
well,
know,
I'm going to have to get some of that
light
Newsom
brown
gel.
Hey, so you hear a little bit about the kind of interesting with the RFK stuff going on.
Yeah.
He's in that getting grilled on the hill a little bit.
It's all politics, unfortunately. You know, it's just the way it goes. You know, it's an opposing party viewpoint, so we just got to call them names.
Yeah.
That's just unfortunate.
He throws out some great examples, like of what, you know, of how unhealthy we are and the different types of, you know, chronic illnesses compared to years ago, which is absolutely right, you know.
Well, and instead of responding to the subject matter, they just say, well, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, you're an idiot. Like, well, you know, like, you accepted this much in, you know, money from Pfizer and whatever.
It doesn't faze him. He's a professional. He's seasoned. He's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah,
but he's right. You know, I mean, we talk about in this show a lot about Social Security and Medicare, and that's some of the reason that, you know, we're unhealthy. I hate to say it, we're as a country. And that's why, you know, you see people getting hip surgeries and knee surgeries. That has to do with, you know, being overweight. And it just puts pressure on the medical, you know, the Medicare system. If you go to Europe and people are walking around and you notice them being in a lot better shape than we are, why do you think that socialized medicine works? Everyone gives it, you know, socialized
medicine.
Well,
they dictate over there. They say, you will not.
Right, but they also don't have to go to the doctor as much, I don't think.
Correct.
I would say that's probably true.
Nobody spends more on doctors than the United States.
Right.
I mean, by huge margins.
But being over, and I went to Europe a couple of times, a lot of the times the way their little towns are set up, people walk.
Yeah.
So just to walk around for the day, you're walking at least a couple miles.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're riding a bike, you know.
Right.
Cars are expensive. So, but the problem with the United States, to some degree, is we're a spread out country.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of land here, and unlike over there, they live in clusters, and you can walk down to the market, you can walk down and, you know, to the pub or whatever.
Yeah.
So here, I mean, especially with the heat in Yuma, well, but even the whole, even like in the Midwest, you know, if you want to walk to the neighboring town, you're walking 20 miles. So back there, things are just a lot closer together, and it's a lot more of a social network. Mm-hmm. I think people are walking around or riding bikes. So
but here in the U.S., the big cities, people walk around a lot more, too.
A ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what percentage of the people, you know, live in the big city, man, it has to be quite a few, because when you vote, right, they have the most electoral votes. But yeah, a lot of it's with our lifestyle. I mean, seems like the food over there seems a lot more... The produce and all that, the fruit seems more fresh, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they pick it 2 weeks in advance and it sits in a store for another week and a half.
And stuff like we do, I think.
Yeah,
sure,
but
more, so.
Well, hopefully he's on to something because, you know, statistically, Americans are getting more obese. Those problems, especially with the shots and all that, they're causing problems for kids. So we'll see where he goes.
Mm-hmm.
Does what he wants to do or beats to his own drum, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe there's a lot of, big lobbyists and big pharmacy that's really controlling the health of us. And it sounds like there is. I don't know if you saw that list of all the people that got contributions from pharmacy. It was on the internet going around, but I think Bernie Sanders got like 1.2 million from, he was on the top of the list for his campaign. Yeah. So
big pharmacy. That was pretty interesting. I mean, it's kind of strange how no one's really ever exposed, what we're going through like he does. I mean, there's a lot of things happening right now and I like it. I mean, with one thing with the deficit, no one's ever really gone to great lengths to try to reduce it, except for, well, Clinton did a pretty good job of it. But it's been a while, and, you know, the deficit, Medicare, Social Security, a lot of things that they need to tackle, and they're just not doing any planning for it ahead of time.
Kick the can down the road, wait for the next guy.
Yeah, and just let the heart disease and let people get, more and more sick, and so I'm glad they're doing something about it. Whether he's doing it the right way or you believe in the political part,
he's exposing, picking up big pharma, looking behind the curtain
into food, all these different colors and dyes. I mean, maybe they're pretty bad for you, but why even do it? I guess more appealing.
I don't know if you saw this, but I'm just going to use ketchup as an example. The ingredients of ketchup in the United States is like 22 items. And then ketchup in Europe is like 6 items, So, I mean,
brighter color.
Well, but there's a lot more additives, I think, in the United States.
Well, my son loves mac and cheese, the Kraft mac and cheese. It's bright yellow, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
So, I got an article here on Social Security, Tom. It's kind of interesting because a lot of people don't understand the annual earnings test for people that take Social Security below full retirement age.
Uh-huh.
And, pretty much full retirement age now is 67. So they have what's called an annual earnings test for claiming Social Security. And the reason they do that, the rationale behind it, is Social Security was never intended to be to replace earnings lost due to retirement, disability, or death. So it wasn't, that's what it's intended for, but it's not for... to supplement someone still working. So when you have these earnings tests, there's two tiers to it. So full retirement age, call it 67, which is pretty much everybody now. If you're under that age and you're going to take Social Security in this year, the most you can make is $23,400. So they take a look at that and they say, okay, if you make over $23,400, Social Security is going to withhold a dollar for every $2 that you should get from Social Security. So they basically only give you 50% of your Social Security. If you're still working and you're in full retirement age, so the year that you reach full retirement age, I didn't know this one. This is kind of interesting. The limit increased to $62,160. So if you turn 67 this year, you can actually make $62,160 before they're going to withhold any money.
Yeah.
And they only withhold one for every three. Once you're over full retirement age, there's no income limits that, they're not going to withhold anything. Now, this is only if you decide I'm going to take Social Security early. So this one too, Tom, for self-employed individuals, if you have more than 45 hours a month in a highly skilled profession, then, you're going to also get a dollar taken for every three. So on the withholding here, they have a special rule called a MET, which is a monthly, what's that one called? That's like the MET is going to be if you take Social Security the year that you turn 67. So let's say this year I'm going to turn 67 right now.
Which is full retirement age for some people.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's 66 and 10 months, or it depends on your date of birth.
Right. So this year, let's say I made, $40,000, and now I want to retire mid-year.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to count that $40,000 of the $23,400, and they're not going to withhold my Social Security a dollar for every two the rest of the year. So I want to start taking Social Security now, but half the year I was underage for the full retirement age, and they don't withhold it. They pretty much...
So they round it probably.
They do an earnings test from here on out, but I don't have to worry about that. I'm not going to get withheld, even though I've already made that income limit.
So you're saying if you take Social Security before your full retirement age, they withhold a good chunk of your Social Security.
If you make over
23,000. Yeah, make 23,000 a year.
Yeah.
But if you do it 6 months prior, is it the number 6 months?
Or any time this year.
Yeah. Oh, it's based on calendar year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Calendar year.
So basically, probably some people can retire sooner by getting Social Security check and, okay.
Correct. They think that they
got to go the whole distance.
I already made over 23,000 this year. I have to wait till a whole new year to retire, and that's not the case.
But I know it's based on the year you were born, and I think every year it goes up like 2 months. So if you just so happen you're going to have your full retirement age, say February of whatever year, you really can't go back to the calendar year. If it's January or February, does that mean you're kind of stuck?
No, because...
Or it goes back 6 months.
Good question. So if you took it February, early, it doesn't really matter when you take it.
No, let's just say your full retirement age was February.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what year, but you want to kind of retire early and not get your Social Security down. Is it based on calendar year or based on months?
Year. So yeah.
Yeah.
If you were to take it the year before that, yes, you would be stuck.
Yeah.
But if you took it in January of that year, you'd be okay.
Yeah. So some of it's just bad timing and when the year you were born.
Because
some people can take it in January, February, March, April.
Right.
I think every 2 months it goes up based on the year you were born. So.
And the other thing that was interesting, this annual earnings test. So if you take Social Security early before full retirement age, and you don't want to make over the $23,400, the only thing that counts towards that is earned income. Pensions don't count.
W-2 income.
W-2 income, yeah.
Yeah.
So
1099 would count.
1099 if you have many hours and you're self-employed. But if you have dividends and interest from investments or a pension coming in, because people get confused with that.
Yeah.
A lot of people will retire early, have a pension, think that counts towards it, and it does not.
No. It seems like they put that in to kind of force people out of retirement, right? Or force people to retire. Like, why would they make that penalty in there?
Because Social Security was never intended to be like, I'm going to get Social Security and work and make a lot of money and have it be like a supplement.
But again, they're forcing the older people out of the workforce, which means the new people can come in and get a job. I think that's why they did it.
I never thought about that, too. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So they say that Social Security is only about 40% of the average American's retirement. So if people that are relying on 100% Social Security are usually going to have a tough retirement unless they live debt-free and they live, very low lifestyle. So that means you got to have other sources of income, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's, retirement income from working for the, county or the state or some kind of pension, or maybe you have a rental house or two, but you got to start planning because, as you know, it happens really fast.
Yeah, it does happen fast. Yeah, before you even know it.
Yeah.
So, and in my situation, I always tell my clients, do as I say, not as I do, because as a financial advisor, You know, I started in this industry. You hired me 20 plus years ago. That's when I really got serious about retirement, age 40, which, you know, I'd be in a much better shape if I'd have started at 20 or did this Trump account or something, yeah. You know, as opposed to waiting. 40 is not bad, but still, that's, you know, I mean, some people might say that's a late start.
Being in the industry, I mean, yeah, and it's not like people can't do anything. I mean, it's kind of like exercise. Like, yeah, we're not telling you to go run a marathon or go run a 10K, mm-hmm. but just go, you know, go walk for 20 minutes. And yeah, what I mean by that is
you're talking about
just start putting money away off your paycheck for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully every year, it's kind of like exercise. You build it up. Okay, now I'm walking two blocks, but I'm going to walk three blocks.
Right.
Keep putting more and more away. You get a raise, spend half, put half away. Just it's all about discipline.
Mm-hmm. And setting goals, too. If you're going to walk, you know, I'm going to walk 2 miles every day, you know, start doing that, or even a mile. It's better than zero. I'm going to start putting away, you know, 2%, 3%, get that match from my employer. And then from there, I'll start bumping it up and start doing better. So.
One of the biggest mistakes people do is they're like, well, I only put into my plan what my employer matches.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's hurting you because you got to put away more money. And, yeah, they're going to match you a certain amount, but it's like saving, you know. So mm-hmm. don't try to put away more than what your employer matches. I mean, that's kind of like.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm talking about as a starting point. At least do that, you know, as a minimum.
Well, my daughter, she's a nurse for like 6 months, and I got her set up in her 401k for above the match.
Nice.
And she's starting to fund a Roth. I think it's $150 a month.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I didn't do that young, you know, so I'm trying and out of my four kids, she's the one that jumped on the wagon first and has you know, being a nurse, you can get overtime, and it's so easier to make money. I mean, you don't have to work. But so anyways, you're right. I mean, it's all comes down to discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at some people and like, okay, this person's in decent shape. This person's in awful shape. You know, maybe, I don't know. And why is that? Well, it comes down to probably exercise.
Yeah, exercise.
There's nothing,
secret
about it.
No,
if the person out of shape, you know, ran 5 miles a day, it'd probably be in shape at some point. Mm-hmm. So same with your money. You just got to start with discipline, maybe do small steps and start getting bigger steps.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Hey,
we're going to take a last break here. This is Money Talk, 560 AM.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we believe that knowledge is power. Since 2001, we've empowered the community with the financial insights and strategies needed to achieve your dreams. Whether you're planning for retirement or managing your wealth, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Investment advisor services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk here. We got another 10 minutes, give or take. So anything else you have on your, one more comment about Social Security is it pretty much affects everybody in the workforce, right? So there's a lot of rules and regs, and if you can make a better decision on Social Security, then it can put you in a better spot. The thing that we see with a lot of people is they make a decision on Social Security and it takes them like, you know, less than 5 minutes on making it. Not so much facts, but just, hey, I think I'm going to take it now. Why? Well, they give you some reason. So it would behoove you to get your Social Security statement, get your spouse's Social Security statement, put them, you know, work with them as a team because, you know, you can leverage that to get more money out of Social Security by looking at both spouses, not just one. And you'd be amazed at how many people say, well, I don't know. I don't care what my wife's going to do with her Social Security, but I'm going to do X. Okay, but you got to work as a group to look at that. So mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't spending the time they need to do it. And once you open those doors, you can't shut them. So the old days, you could have went back and, you know, redone them, but now you can't. So it's very crucial to make sure you understand what you're trying to do and what your mm-hmm. options are.
Yeah, like in my case, I'm 5 years older than Teresa, and my Social Security will be higher than hers. but women usually live longer, right? So if I let's say I take Social Security in 2 years at 62, then that's locked in. That much is locked in. Call it, I don't know, call it 1,800 compared to...
It's a 25% haircut if you go at 62.
Yeah, 32% haircut.
It's 25 in the front, 32 on the back.
32 in the back. Yeah, you're right, yeah. So 25% haircut, but that's for life. And, you know, with me being having a higher benefit than her, she should outlive me. But when I die and she says, well, I'm gonna take my husband's Social Security and hop on it.
Yeah.
You don't get both, but she could hop onto the higher one if I waited. So if I waited till 67, and then don't forget, like you said, you get an 8% increase from 67 to 70. So that's 24%. Then
let me check this out. If you take it at 62, you take a 25% haircut.
Yep.
Beyond your normal retirement age, so say 66 to 70, that's four more years. It goes up 8% a year in those 4 years. So 32% plus 25%, and we're talking a 50% increase from 62 to 70.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you have spouses that have one spouse had much better income than the other, that happens quite a bit, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes a strategy would be to take the stronger spouse and make them go to 70, mm-hmm. because if you live a short life, and it could happen, that higher amount would then go to the spouse that doesn't have as much money in.
Correct.
And a lot of Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's things to think about, little strategies you can do.
And if you're, some spouses maybe have a lesser amount, like you said, Tom, or maybe didn't even work enough to qualify for Social Security. But they're still able to get the spousal benefit, which is half of what your spouse is getting.
Can you explain the spousal benefit?
So let's say I was at home and taking care of the kids, and my wife was working, but I didn't.
You have to be at full retirement age for the stronger spouse, right? If you have full retirement age,
correct.
Yeah, you can't take it at 62. You got to wait for the full retirement age for the stronger spouse,
right?
And then once that happens. Then what happens?
But let's say I didn't even qualify for Social Security. I really didn't work much, or it was very small. If my spouse at 67, let's say she was getting $2,000, I could be on what's called the spousal benefit, and I would get $1,000. So I would get half of what she's getting, even though if I did it on my own, I was getting nothing or under $1,000.
Now, doesn't she have to be above a certain age? Like, is it 62?
Yeah, she has to be above a certain age.
You can't take it.
No, I can't take it before.
Yeah.
She has to be able to either qualify or be taking it.
So what happens?
But a lot of people don't think about that. They're like, oh, I'm not going to qualify for Social Security. Well, if you're married and your spouse is, then you are too.
So what happens? Say there's a weak money put. I mean, the earnings are pretty weak. They're small.
Yeah.
You can take half of the beneficiary. They got a claim, I believe, right?
Yep.
But will theirs keep growing at age 70 and it might be worth more than $1,000? What happens to the original Social Security money? Because the longer you hold off, it grows.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to that money?
So
they can jump back to it, right?
If they don't, let's say at 67, you hop onto it. I think your spouse has to claim, though.
Yeah, you have to claim.
Yeah, so
you're
not going to be able to get the bump up to 70 because 70, you have to wait.
Yeah, but you can claim it, and then you can wait a month and unclaim it.
You could. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the point is you can still wait till 70.
Right, but if yours goes up, your spousal benefit is going to go up at half. So let's say you wait till 70 and you're going to get 2,500, then I would get 1,250. So mine would go up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what you're asking?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm saying that if the spouse takes half of the benefit and they qualify and all the rules work out, then what happens to her amount? I think it still grows where she can wait till she's 70.
Mm-hmm.
And then she can, if it's like $1,200 instead of $1,000, she can jump back up.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that. It's like 100% answer. It's a good question, though.
Yeah, well, I would. Yeah, let's look at that. Because they made some changes with the spousal benefit. They made it more strict. So in the past, it was a little bit more lenient. But I think like 4 or 5 years ago, they made it more strict. But, and the other thing to think about Social Security is Have you married someone for 10 years, got a divorce, and then you're still single? So you could remarry again, get a divorce, remarry, maybe become a widower, but you're single at that point. You have access to your ex-spouse Social Security numbers.
As long as you're married 10 years. That's
as long as you're married for 10 years and single.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're talking to people, you know, you want to get Social Security statements from both spouses. But one of the questions is, has one of you ever been married? Well, they're married, so it won't matter. Mm-hmm. But if you go with a single person, yeah, have you ever been married before? Yeah, I was married a long time ago. They don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, well, if that person put a lot of money into the Social Security program, you can probably pull a lot more than
that. You can be entitled to more than one, too, if you were married to two people for more than 10 years each.
Yeah. So if you had a Don Juan guy who would divorce someone every 11 years,
yeah,
and he did that for 40 years, they could be four ex-spouses that are single that are pulling on his Social Security,
mm-hmm,
which means that his government's getting cheated pretty hard there.
Doesn't affect his benefit, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to know about it.
And the ex-spouse that you're pulling on that doesn't even know you're doing it.
Right.
So it's nothing, you know, some people are like, I hate, you know, hate that person. I don't want nothing to do with them. Well, if you can pull on it, they won't know, mm-hmm, anyways. You know, some of the, you know, divorces.
Yeah, there's also an age thing that's kind of interesting. So if you're single and you get married again, that ruins it. But if you're over 60 and you get married, it's okay. So there is an age where they're like, okay, if you get married over 60, it still counts so you as single.
But you have a choice?
Yeah.
So if you get married, you can pick your present spouse.
If you're over 60. A certain age, I'm pretty sure it's 60.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wait, let's find that rule out too, because I wasn't aware of that.
But yeah.
That'd be good to know. So those are two things that I email you when I get back to the office and
okay,
say, talk to your people.
But you mentioned planning for Social Security, you know, and having either doing it on your own or having us help. But there's a lot of nuances in that Social Security. You know, I've seen some scenarios where you make $200,000-$300,000 more, $500,000 more over your lifetime because of these different choices.
Yeah, if you live especially if you live long enough. The longer you live, it affects the choices more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, in short, it's worth it to be looking at that Social Security, especially if you're married.
Yeah.
And do an analysis on it instead of making a 5-minute decision, Tom.
Yeah. But the bigger thing people need to understand is we call it the wealth gap. And the wealth gap is how much money do you need to live on, not only year one of your retirement, but year 5 through 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that wealth gap is, that's what's going to have to come from your investment, whether it's real estate or stocks or whatever. So basically, you know, some people technically can retire and they can pay their bills, but if they live long enough, especially with inflation, then they don't have enough money. But they're not going to know that till they're like 82, and at that point it's going to be hard to go back to the workplace at 82. So it's really something you really want to plan for retirement, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. Well, the quicker you plan for it, the better you are. I mean, you can have a 30-year-old do a financial plan. It won't take a lot of money for them to hit their goals.
Yeah.
But in general, don't go quit your job. And we see this happen a lot, especially with government employees. They're like, oh, I'm going to retire next year. Have you looked at your numbers? Well, not really, but I can pay my bills. Yeah, that's not good, because if you live long enough.
There's no COLA on their pension either.
Yeah. So anyways, financial plan is the name of the game. Only about 10, 15% of Americans have ever done a financial plan. We use Money Guide Pro, which is a financial planning tool. So anyways, call our office. Be more than happy to talk to you about that. 928-329-1700. And we're wrapping up the hour here. Any last words for you, George?
No. Stay safe out there, everybody. You know, pretty muddy in the roads, but
yep.
Have a great weekend, Yuma.
Yep. Stay safe.
The opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC Investment Advisory Services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.